Thanks for listening to this podcast of Trending with Timmeri from the Relevant Radio app. Anything you share in terms of episodes, whether it's texting it to a friend, posting on social media, helps to build up the kingdom for God, to help confront the challenging issues we face as a culture, but with joy, with hope, and with an eternal perspective where our faith collides with everyday life, bringing eternal principles to help us live our life joyfully.
So, what's trending? Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timmeri on Relevant Radio.
Have you ever heard of the trend loud budgeting? It's a new way of budgeting and actually even communicating to others how you're operating your budget, especially when social opportunities come up. I'll share with you a little bit more about that in just a moment. Today on Trending will be Jonathan and Amanda Texera. They're from WalletWin.com, a Catholic take, which is a refreshing take on finances with hope and charity involved in the type of decisions you make with regard to your money. If you'd like to join the conversation and have a question with a Catholic take on budgeting, finances, engaging in social engagements, and how it might break the bank or not, our toll-free line is 888-914-9149, and it's sponsored by Catholic Order of Foresters Life Insurance. Also, why are women ditching the pill? As FDA last year approved the first over-the-counter birth control pill to be sold, it's officially now being sold on Amazon and soon to be in places such as Walmart and Walgreens. Why are they tone deaf? At the same time as many people are leaving the pill behind, and we see countless videos on TikTok and Instagram chronicling the story of how women would rather have their normal cycles and periods and the PMS that comes along than all of the symptoms that they thought were normal but didn't learn that they weren't normal until after years of having been on the birth control pill. I'll dive into some of the probably most shocking but clearly and highly researched data backing some of the reasons why the pill is bad for women. Not to mention, if you want to disagree with me, that's cool, because I know studies like to report that 99% of Catholics take the pill too, or other forms of birth control. Just do one thing for me if you're taking the pill. Go and read the insert of your birth control. Just read the insert. Today, I'm going to post a link to the O-pill insert, which is the new birth control pill available. Well, it's not new. It's been out for a while. It's the so-called low progesterone pill, and it's been out for years. And just that alone, we'll dive into the data and research, peer-reviewed data, and some of the highest levels of medical journals being published. That, and also, what are three types of friendships, and do you want to be a good friend? Do you know how to be a good friend? More on that later here on the show. Again, our toll-free line, if you have a question for my guest, Jonathan and Amanda, is 888-914-9149. And I'd love to hear from you. Give us a call as well. If you came off birth control and want to share your story of some of the symptoms you were having, how you felt after the fact, I'd love to hear from you as well. You can always write me on social media with your questions. We put a question box up. Just follow me at Timmeri, T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E, on Instagram or wherever you're at. So this new trend has gone viral on social media this year, especially kicking off at the beginning of the year, called loud budgeting. Have you ever wanted to do something or had to decline a social engagement because it would break the bank for you? Could be coffee, lunch, a party. Maybe you went to a party but showed up late because you didn't want to see people not bring a present. It could be a destination wedding. It could be when someone invites you to go on a joint vacation. Even just hanging out with people and having them over for dinner. You're concerned about how much or what you can provide for others. Well, there's a new trend out there of loud budgeting where you're actually communicating concerns, challenges, and goals surrounding money. Join me today to explain what it is and maybe how to make it happen if this is for you as well are Jonathan and Amanda Texera from WalletWin.com, and they actually have a special visitor crashing this conversation today as well. Welcome back to Trending.
Thank you very much, Timmeri.
Now, I know you guys... You guys recently just adopted a baby, and we're going to have to dive into a little bit of that story more next time, but you have a little one with you. Is that correct?
We do. I don't know if anybody can hear him breathing. He's in my
in my Mobi wrap right now, but his name is James, and we found out about him on March 1st. And then 13 hours later, he came into the world in Texas. And so he was quite the surprise, but one of the best surprises we've ever received.
Well, congratulations and welcome to the little guy with us. Let's dive into this new trend of loud budgeting. It is interesting to me because I remember when I was in college, you know, you're a college student, you don't have a lot of money, you've got to be aware of your finances, and everyone wanted to do stuff where it was going out to eat or just going to get drinks. And I was one where I went, you know, I'm not going to let myself not go to things. I'll just go and I'll have a cup of water and I'll be completely content. And you don't mention it, you don't discuss it. Everyone knows why you're probably just having a glass of water. But that kind of brings us to this new trend of loud budgeting. Can you tell me more about it?
Loud budgeting, like you mentioned earlier, is simply just living your budget maybe a little bit more of a public way. So if your financial goals at the time maybe would say that you should prioritize putting money away in savings or paying off debt, whatever it might be, well, if you prioritize those things over going out with friends, taking a lavish vacation, whatever it might be, and someone asks you to do those things, you politely decline. And with loud budgeting, you let them know what's going on. It's pretty helpful because then it's not, hey, I don't want to go out with you because I don't like you. It's, you know what? I love spending time with you. Going out tonight sounds really great. However, I'm setting my financial goals on, say, getting out of debt right now. So I want to put as much money towards that goal as I can right now, which means I'm cutting back in some places. One of those is going out, but I'd love to spend some time with you. So maybe we could hang out just, you know, at my apartment, or maybe next time we could do something in instead of going out.
I love this because it's very simple. You don't have to share too much detail. And even if it is something such as paying off debt, it doesn't have to be something where you overshare and it's too many details. It's just being honest. I'm trying to pay off debt. And you can turn perhaps the negative of declining the invitation into a positive of your reason, but also different things you can do, just as you mentioned, Jonathan.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Right. And something I love about it is that it assumes that people have financial goals that they are trying to protect and trying to go after. And I just love how this is now becoming a normalized thing in our society. You know, in the past, it was not always talked about. Nobody really knew what other people were doing with their money. It was just kind of a hush-hush. We don't discuss these types of things. But, you know, as the generations shift and change, and now we have generations that have student loan debt and, you know, other expenses on the rise and housing costs on the rise, we've just had to become more transparent, if you will, on those resources and how God's asking us to prioritize this, that, or another, and maybe not temporarily for a season, this fun outing or that type of social activity.
I think loud budgeting maybe gives it maybe a bad rap. I don't know, depending on your personality or what you might think. It's not obnoxious budgeting. It's just living in context of the goals that you have for your life. So, you know, if somebody, you know, if you're just saying, you know, you're trying to maybe eat healthier, somebody invites you to, you know, go out to the all-you-can-eat dessert buffet, you're probably going to say no thanks to that because I've got these other goals I'm trying to hit. It's the same thing, but with your money. And because money touches so much of our lives, it can come up quite a bit in our everyday life, but it's just living that everyday life in the context of what we're trying to do and not letting our plan get railroaded by some spur of the moment invite by someone who might well be much less disciplined than you are with your finances.
And I like when Jonathan mentioned, you know, it's not obnoxious budgeting. It's not just a way to be a cheapskate. You know, it's you having an actual goal and an actual priority that you're trying to protect. It's not just I'm a tightwad who wants to sit at home on my cash pile. That's not the point of loud budgeting. It's about your deeper yes instead of, you know, the temporary no's that you're saying right now.
I find it somewhat virtuous as well. And if you're just joining me, that's Jonathan and Amanda Texera from WalletWin.com. And I think it is virtuous because it's honesty about your circumstances, why you're declining things or how you maybe are adjusting things. And I think it's inspiring for other people. We live at a time, especially if you look at the millennial generation down, who have a huge lack of money savvy today. And I think there's a difference between honesty versus TMI. And I think there's a difference between being embarrassed and saying, oh, I can't, I don't have any money, versus just being forthcoming. I mean, the last year and a half or more so year, my honest response to some people when they say, well, why don't you do this for the house? Or why don't you come and do this with me? Is, you know, we're still recovering from having moved cross country, bought a house, moving to California, that we're just recouping a little bit right now. And it's very simple and honest. It doesn't give too much detail, but I think it gives some context that gives a little bit of integrity and inspiration sometimes when it comes to how we navigate finances.
Totally. And I love that you use the word, you know, you see there being virtue in it, because really there's a lot of prudence and there's wisdom and there's a little bit of humility and there's temperance. And so really, yeah, budgeting helps you do that. And then if you do it out loud, it gives your friends permission even to say, oh, maybe I could do that too. Maybe I don't have to just always say yes to things and just rack up credit card debt. And so it gives other people a chance to realize that there could be a different way than they've been doing it.
Another side of this as well that I was kind of thinking about was the opportunity for generosity, but then something my producer Patrick just mentioned is maybe some of those awkward moments. So my thoughts were on the positive side, well, maybe you're really forthcoming. Hey, can't go to dinner today. I'm trying to pay off debt. If we want to do something else, I'm totally up for it. And maybe your friend's like, hey, I've got you. Don't worry about it. Let's still go to dinner. Mm-hmm. I think there's a challenge of accepting someone's generosity. There's some humility and it's generous to do so. And it gives other people the opportunity of, hey, you know, I'm doing well. They're working toward this goal. I've got you. I'll get you dinner. And, you know, I think that there's that side of it. But then one of my producers, Patrick, just asked, what do you do if, say, your friend does say, oh, I'll pay for you, or just come do whatever, don't worry about it, I've got you. There is that awkward side to it as well, if you politely would like to decline as well.
Oh, so like if you do actually don't want to go?
No, it's not that you don't want to go, but that you feel uncomfortable having someone else pay for you.
Oh, sure.
So don't use budgeting as an excuse, right?
No, yeah, it's not an excuse. I would say, like you were talking about, Timmery, we have to become comfortable with accepting the generosity of others, of being in the place of the person being helped. It's a little bit of pride, certainly, to only want to be on the side that gives and helps other people and is extending the arm to help pick somebody else up. We certainly need to get the hand up from time to time in our own lives. We know that that is true and absolutely vital to understand in the spiritual life. And in the rest of our life, our social life, yes, sometimes we need to be the person accepting the help, you know, being treated, being taken out. You know, yes, you're not on the edge of destitution or anything, and it is a choice that you're making. But this person who's offering to, you know, pay for your way in or whatever it might be, all right, they know exactly why you chose not to pay for it, and they are choosing to pay your side of it. And that is a great gift for them to offer, and an acceptance of their generosity and their friendship for you to accept.
And there may be legitimate times where it's okay to decline. Maybe the gift is too outrageous in the particular person or the relationship. There's a discomfort there. And I think there's like a legitimacy to the gratitude and acknowledgement before moving on. But I think there's another side as well, and I'd like to hear your thoughts, where and I think a lot of people do this. Well, don't worry, I've got you. You can just get me next time. Or this idea of a loan, and it might be tempting to just enter into that mini loan, yet it could cause many interpersonal problems or cause a bigger debt issue as well. So if you could speak to that side of it.
Oh my goodness, absolutely. I would not, you know, receive that quote unquote generosity, especially because you don't know what you're signing up for. You know, that friend might take you out and maybe you got the cheapest thing on the menu with a water. And then the next time you're going to grab the ticket, they order a filet mignon and get three drinks with dinner and dessert and an appetizer. You know, sometimes it ends up really lopsided. And so I just wouldn't want anybody to get into that position. And so, you know, getting a little bit of just that gracefulness of being able to decline and just communicate your boundaries and that it's not necessary for this person to go ahead and do that. and that you'd really like to do something else with them, mm-hmm. to communicate that you do value the friendship, that would be the more appropriate response.
Yeah. Or if they're continuing to insist, we're already quote unquote loud budgeting about this. We're already out there. So let's just go one more half step forward in that and just let them know, just clarify, hey, it's not kind of dispel some of what maybe the enemy might be wanting to whisper in their ear later. You know, it's not because I don't want to hang out with you or I don't value our friendship or anything, but I have these goals that I'm committed to. And so I'm choosing to not spend money on this, whether it's right now or when I would pay you back in a few weeks. So I'll accept the gift, but I need you to know that it's a gift. This can't be alone.
It's not then, you, it's me moment. That is very legitimate. It has to be navigated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And just being forthright and upfront and honest about it can help dispel some of the misunderstandings and making sure that both of you understand that it's a gift, you know, that you're not moving forward and now they're harboring a little bit of resentment because, come on, Timmery still hasn't taken me out. I've taken her out last week. So that you can avoid that in your friendships by just, again, being upfront and honest.
Mm-hmm. And anybody who is your friend that is going to have a problem with this or just always want to cover you or whatever because they just want you to be there and they can't understand why you wouldn't, sometimes you might want to look at it. What is that friendship? You know, if you were somebody who was avoiding alcohol for whatever reason, and you went out with friends and they like could not understand why you wouldn't want to drink and they're giving you a hard time. Well, those aren't your real friends. And so the same concept can be translated into this as well. If somebody just can't stand that you've got some boundaries with money and they just constantly have to overblow their own boundaries to cover you because they're not comfortable with it themselves, you might want to look at that friendship.
Yeah, it can weed out some friendships. I think that's pretty great. What other tips do you have for how to navigate trying to do a little bit of this loud budgeting? And I am curious, do you like the loud budgeting? Are you a fan of it? Because I know it's a trend, but I'd be curious of your opinion.
I guess first off, I like that it's happening, that people are making decisions and allowing those financial decisions, that budget, that plan that they made for their spending for the month ahead, to stick with that plan, to let it, you know, kind of show them the way to go and the way not to go. That's a really good thing. I would say this loud budgeting thing is really just budgeting. If you are budgeting, if you are making this plan and living it out and allowing it to guide your spending, which it should, then you've probably already been doing this.
Yeah.
And it's, you don't have to be any louder. You just allow it to,
Are you telling
guide your
me
spending
that,
and be forward about it.
Are you telling me that this is just millennials and Gen Z suddenly discovering a budget and posting about it on TikTok and Instagram and on Reels?
Yes. You just nailed it. Yeah. And they had to come up with a new term for it.
Well, if you are loud budgeting and loud and proud, sorry if I'm teasing you here, but there's legitimacy too. It's so funny how suddenly something is like new and trendy because a millennial or a Gen Z discovered it. And yeah, it's something that people have been doing for centuries. And just because it's new to them doesn't mean it's not new to everyone. But this is what's beautiful about sharing new things that we're learning that is helpful, that are things that are helpful, is because we can grow from them and learn. So loud budgeting, I think, is a new trend that is an old trend come back again. And I hope if you have found it helpful, we'd love to hear from you. If you have questions about budgeting, the phone number is 888-914-9149. We'll be right back with Jonathan and Amanda Texera from WalletWin.com. Have a question about budgeting? Give us a call, or you can ask now on social media as well. Just follow me at Timmery, TimmeriE. That question box is up there on Instagram as well if you'd like to ask a question.
We're talking about what you're thinking about. You're listening to Trending with Timmery on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Jonathan and Amanda from WalletWin.com are with me taking your budgeting questions. We just dove into the trend of loud budgeting. Millennials, Gen Z have discovered what a budget is, and they are letting the world know on TikTok, Instagram, and those nice little reels. If you have a question, maybe you're new to loud budgeting or you're just trying to navigate things in the current economy, phone number is 888-914-9149. You can also always ask your question on social media. Just follow me at Timmery. That's T-I-M-M. E-R-I-E. Questions coming in online. Let's start with Emily. And this comes back to the loud budgeting topic. She says, several times I've had to turn down friends' invitation to do things because I don't want to overspend. It's not that I don't have the money to do, it's that I don't want to spend it. Sometimes it's challenging and a little awkward explaining this without coming off as a miser. For those of you on a strict budget, what do you do or say in these situations?
That's such a good question. I think there's a couple of different elements going on here. So again, loud budgeting is not, I'm broke and I have no money. It's, I have money and I'm choosing to prioritize it in this way or that way. And that might not align. You might not have the same priorities or interests as your friends. And so sometimes those will be in conflict and you just have to be able to communicate what it is that you're choosing to spend your money on, and specifically, more importantly, what you're choosing not to spend your money on in this particular season of life as you save for something or try to get out of debt or save up a down payment, et cetera. I recently actually had a coaching client, a young girl in her 20s, hoping to actually get engaged soon herself. And she's taken inventory of her finances, and she had, you know, just over $10,000 in credit card debt and about $80,000 in student loans. And she's sitting there panicking and she's realizing that this credit card debt has racked up and the student loans aren't getting paid because she's gone to 4 or 5, you know, bachelorette destination parties, or she's been, she's a bridesmaid in 3 or 4 weddings next year. And she's just sitting there saying, when am I going to be able to make a dent and actually prepare for my vocation? And so in that coaching session, I gave her, you know, some of those scripts to follow of, you know, tell your friends that, you know, no, I'm not able to go to the destination bachelorette party, and that my gift to you and your future spouse is just that I'm going to say yes as a bridesmaid, and that my presence on that day is going to be my gift because I have these other things that I'm trying to work on financially as well. And that's more than appropriate, and it's totally okay, because that is a financial investment to be a bridesmaid. And so whatever it is, you know, just make sure that you're communicating what it is that you are, what your boundaries are. And then again, always try to preserve the friendship by coming up with an alternative way to maybe grow in your friendship or spend time together, because that'll go a long way. That really communicates what you value.
I think this is a really great example, and I can actually think of a number of friends who have been in similar situations, traveling for destination weddings, who were bridesmaids multiple times, trying to get gifts for the events as well, and it absolutely killed their budget, put them in nearly debt, but it was years of it, and that can be a long season when you're trying to save up, pay things off. There's a legitimacy to it, and then there's also the side of, well, what if your friends just like to do things that are expensive fun? And my proposition is finding ways to propose things that are inexpensive and fun as well, or cost next to nothing. I mean, I'm a huge hiker. It costs next to nothing to pack a lunch and go hiking with just the right shoes and clothing. And so maybe it's something such as that, that you can start proposing those fun things that are doable without having to break the bank.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's one of the, maybe a misconception people might have is that in budgeting or loud budgeting or however you want people to hear it or not, is that it has to just be a no. But you can just make tweaks. So instead of going out for, you know, dinner and drinks, maybe you go out for appetizers or you go at happy hour. Instead of going to see a movie, maybe you and get the popcorn and the snacks and all this stuff, maybe you just see the movie and you maybe stop at a dollar store on the way first to the grocery store and you sneak a candy bar in your pocket. There could be all these little tweaks that you can make where you have essentially the same experience, but you are definitely not having the same financial experience.
Here's another question that was interesting. Kim asked, how do I say I can't afford an expensive family vacation? I originally agreed to go on a family vacation with some other family members, but I can't afford it. I'm too broke and in debt to do it. And I didn't just flat out say it. Wasn't expecting the ticket amount. And she says, it's shameful to try and admit this now to my family. So nothing's been booked yet, but it's still in the early planning phase of the trip. So she's looking for advice.
Mm. I would say first, it's good to bring it up now, to kind of build up the courage and broach this topic now, instead of once and maybe they've booked the Airbnb, thinking of that your family's going to be there too and they need a bigger one, or whatever the plans are that they've moved forward thinking that you're going to be there. This is something that I think experienced in our relationship. We were long distance. We were focused missionaries on different campuses when we were dating and getting engaged. And we wanted to spend time in real life with each other to see how this might go, if it would be good or not, to move forward. And so we would fly out to visit one another often. And later on, once, you know, our finances started to come together, I got to tell Amanda about this credit card debt that I had racked up visiting her.
Oh.
Going on these trips, which I didn't talk about at the time. And I'm sure if I would have, you know, we could have found ways to maybe, you know, sure, maybe when she's visiting, I don't take her out to a Broadway show, or we don't go out to dinner, but maybe we cook something. Mm-hmm. So it could have been better financially if I maybe could have been a bit clearer and more brave with my communication up front.
And in this particular situation, I think that there's an opportunity. This is still the planning phase. There is no shame in going to your family and saying, look, I was thinking it was going to be this type of a number. It looks double that. This is going to take my family more runway to save up for. And so would it be cool with everybody if we, you know, add a year to this? I know that that would be a little bit of a, you know, a wet blanket sometimes, but in order for my family not to be burdened by this or hurt by this, we do need more time to save for it. And that right there is just going to save a world of frustration for everybody, because then everybody knows that maybe you do need more time, or they're going to say, you know what? No, we don't really want to wait. And so you guys, you can just bow out and maybe we'll plan something way down the road in the future. It gives people the opportunity to either agree to postpone and find a different plan, or to just go ahead and continue the plan without you.
Or hey, hope maybe even give them that opportunity, like you were mentioning earlier, of saying, hey, all right, okay, so you guys were planning on it being X. Well, how about you guys contribute X and we can cover the rest.
Us grandparents who don't have any more kids in the home and we have a lot more, you know, flexible income, we'll go ahead and cover the rest. That could absolutely happen.
Yeah. And that's what my parents have done with family weddings. There was a big family wedding that I was in a few years ago, and my parents got an Airbnb and said, hey, we're covering this. Everyone come. And I was able to use some points from various airlines and was able to fly on points to make it happen. And you know, they helped take care of the rental car. And there have been times, especially the last couple of years, where I've had to say, go without us. I would love to. That sounds like a blast. I would love to go. My extended family is all going to Alaska this summer. And between just the cost of it, the time off, all of it, it's just not a season we can do that. And just being able to say, we can't do this right now. That sounds like so much fun. And it's funny though, because I know sometimes people, whether it's family or friends who invite you on various travel opportunities, they don't get it. So for example, I went and visited my sister last month. We took our whole family, and it was literally between my family and her family pooling together all of our various airline points, we were able to make the trip happen. But that was the only way we were going to see each other within like a year context. And again, these are details no one needs to know about, but I know that there can be judgment because people will say, well, they did this, but they didn't do that. Why can't they visit me and not this other person? So I think there are sometimes a lot of details behind traveling and the choice of where people are visiting that can feel really awkward. And just there needs to be a certain level of just integrity about it from the get-go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just being upfront and on our end, just assuming the best for other people, and hopefully they do the same for us.
One more question here, and I love this one. Owen's 23 years old. He said, I'm not in a relationship and I'm still living with my parents. He said, I'm starting an apprenticeship in plumbing, so I have no savings, and I have about $6,000 in debt to my parents. What advice do you have for me?
All right. Well, Owen, you could be in a much worse spot and have a much worse current reality facing what you've got. When I heard you're living at home, so you're saving on expenses. You're in this apprenticeship, which is a solid path forward into a career that's in a trade that's probably going to pay you pretty well, especially in comparison to the time and the energy and the expense that you're putting into it. So I think you're really just kind of stay the path. Understand what your goals are, what your timelines might be as you're working through this apprenticeship. You know, maybe there's, you know, your hours working or your rate that you might be able to get can go up. Kind of maybe try to plan some of this out so you know the greater context as you are maybe being invited out to do this with friends, or as you are seeing all these other people maybe do other things in life. And I want to do that too, but figure out where it might fit in your plan. And of course, you know, if we're going to loud budget or anything like this, you got to have a budget to begin with. So you need some of those financial goals, and then you need your plan, your budget, to help you figure out what the steps are, how you're going to use that money you have in order to go move forward in, you know, saving up to get your own place, to pay off that debt, whatever those goals might be that you have.
Norma called from Florida. She said, my grandson is turning one and they're taking him to Disneyland, and they invited my husband and I, but it's too expensive. I don't want to go because of this, I don't want to strain the relationship by not going. What advice do you have for navigating that one?
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's more than appropriate just to say that we value him, and can we maybe, you know, can we schedule some other type of visit to come celebrate his first birthday and actually get to spend some quality time outside of maybe this Disneyland trip? That would be fun, but it's more than appropriate to just say, we don't have the funds available for that. You know, we have seen actually many retirees who are on more of that fixed income not be able to do all the things that maybe their dual income children are doing. And so this is exactly one of those types of situations of a loud budget where it'd be appropriate to communicate that. And again, find a way to celebrate your grandchild in a different way that aligns more with your budget, in a maybe a more quality way too, because Disneyland is really fun. It really can be super fun, but sometimes a one-year-old at Disneyland is more prone to a meltdown than quality time with grandma. And so you can absolutely find a different way to celebrate him.
And so many things, I think, to navigate on things such as this. And more details came in from Norma. She said she does have the money, but she said it seems wasteful to her. And I think the same ideas apply. Hey, this isn't something we're going to spend money on right now, but I'd love to celebrate in another way. And leave it at that. You don't have to overgo into details. Mm-hmm. I know a lot of grandparents are afraid of being cut off right now. I hear the trend left and right of late of just grandparents feeling like they're walking on eggshells if they do something wrong, whether it be feed the wrong thing or not following a particular rule. So I get the hesitancy, but also just the honesty. The kids don't remember their first birthdays too. So I think letting go of some of those worries about not being around is important as well. Mm-hmm. Well, that's been Jonathan and Amanda Texera. Congratulations on the new baby with you today, crashing the show. We are so happy that he's here. Congratulations to your whole family. And if you'd like to learn more from Jonathan and Amanda, you can find them at walletwin.com. That's walletwin.com. I'll be right back here on Trending.
So, what's trending? Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Why are women ditching the pill, birth control? And at the same time, while many women are saying no thank you, posting their stories and testimonies on TikTok, Instagram, Reels, at the same time, the FDA last year approved O-pill, which is the low progesterone version of, or progesterone only version of the pill. It's also referred to as the mini pill, because a lot of people aren't supposed to be taking hormonal birth control, whether it be due to clotting disorders, history of stroke in the family, or migraines. All of those are reasons why you are not a candidate for taking the pill. Yet medical community is not vetting those people out. One of those such people include Hailey Bieber, who ended up nearly dying as a result of being put on the pill without proper vetting from her physician. You can listen to more of her story. I actually shared it here on Trending before. We'll be sure to link to Hailey Bieber's story. But here's what's startling. Amazon is now selling Opill. Birth control pill is now available over-the-counter due to the FDA's deregulation of the pill, making it available. It will be available any day now at places such as Walgreens and Walmart. I'm telling you this because you need to be aware as a parent that kids have this heightened level of access to birth control, not only already because physicians can legally ask you to leave the room and legally prescribe your children birth control, but also because they've already been able, that is, youth, minors, to access birth control. Most places, by the age of 13, you have the ability to access hormonal birth control. But now Opill's making it so that it's accessible at Walgreens, Walmart, on Amazon. It's already available on Amazon. I was able to pull it up, and at which point I also realized Plan B is available on Amazon. And it's so startling to me because these are massive endocrine disruptors. Women are nuking their bodies with endocrine disruptors, with generic large doses of hormones that are known and labeled as group 1 carcinogens. Now, it's interesting to me because a lot of women will choose today to take the, quote, mini pill, the progestin-only pill. Also, one of those brands includes Opill here in the United States. Now, it's already known to be a less effective version of birth control, but also it's interesting because the data and research on this is huge. There was a JAMA study, which is the Journal of the American Medical Association, that came out well over 5 years ago now, citing that girls already struggle with depression and anxiety on the pill, but it's even worse with the mini pill, the progestin-only pill, also now known as Opill, being sold for anyone who wants it over the counter. So a heightened depression and anxiety. But what came out in that JAMA study as well, and I forgot to link to that. Maybe my producer Patrick can find that one because I have a bunch of these studies I'm citing in the show notes for today's show. So be sure to go and grab that relevantradio.com/trending or wherever you catch your podcast. We are there because some people will say, well, prove the data. The data is all there. That's the Journal of American Medicine Association. That's their data. Here's another one. There's a 2015 Danish study that shows that girls who take the Opill or progestin, other versions of the progestin only pill, also known as the mini pill, have triple the risk of glioma to others who did not. Now, this research is found at the National Library of Medicine. What's glioma? It's tumors in the brain and spinal cord. Women are dying from the side effects of the pill. The problem is that it's not always being traced back to the pill. But this is a Danish study, countless authors behind it. Another study in 2016 shows the increased risk of cervical cancer and breast cancer for having taken Opill and other progestin-only pills. There are 49 researchers with names backing that research. And again, it's available at the National Library of Medicine. The data's all there. The research is incredible if you dive into it. I was even looking at research earlier today showing that many girls who are taking birth control are having liver disease now. Well, why? Because your hormones impact your liver. And we have these massive endocrine disruptors. These are literally bombs being dropped in the bodies of women today, completely disrupting the endocrine system and the rest of the bodily functions. Anxiety, depression. Here's what's interesting. We're learning that girls who start taking birth control in their teens are actually damaging permanently the development of the brain and the ability to cope with and manage stress. And it's permanent damage. The brain is not able to learn how to adapt to the stress. The body does not adapt to the stress. The person can work on coping skills, but the body is not able to use its natural mechanisms that are in place to help the body naturally adapt to the stress that does occur daily and in cycles in our daily lives. Now, this is all research and data that's out there. I was just listening to a podcast and research from people who are even in favor of birth control, but who are being honest about the fact that the damage to the body's ability for women to ever be able to, on its own, the body adapt to stress, it's gone. You have to learn coping skills. This is one of the key reasons why millennials down are struggling immensely in society today, why antidepressants are on the rise, anti-anxiety medication is on the rise. Why people are struggling so significantly with mental health crisis is because we are medicated so heavily as women with birth control. And I know the data points, Guttmacher Institute points to basically 6 out of 10 women today are using hormonal birth control, not even for the purpose of avoiding pregnancy, but for other so-called medical issues, whether it be heavy periods, acne. We could go through a litany of reasons why women will take birth control. I get it. I've had a lot of friends who have been there. But what I do know, and it's my story as well, is that if I had ever accepted the pill when it was offered to me, I would have done more damage to my body and my own cyclical issues that I was having. I have Hashimoto's disease, or had Hashimoto's disease and polycystic ovarian syndrome. Praise God, they're in remission and both being managed. But for years, physicians would just say, just take the pill. That's the quick and easy fix to them. Never actually treating or diagnosing the whole person. And we know with Hashimoto's disease and polycystic ovarian syndrome, which Hashimoto's is a thyroid disease, and PCOS is another disease, both of which are negatively impacted by birth control, both of which impact women's fertility long-term as well. Now, if you do nothing else, and maybe you disagree with me with regard to the pill, I'm not trying to disagree with anyone. I'm just showing you the data and the research. The data is there, whether it be in the medical community, the psychological community, the sociological community on how men and women interact when on the pill, and it's no good. Now, if you do nothing else, go and look, we're posting this online, at the O-Pill product label. I'm posting the full sheets of it, and look at all the side effects. If you're on birth control, which even statistics show that 99% of women, even who are Catholic, are on the pill. I don't believe that number. It comes out of the Guttmacher Institute, which is the right-hand researcher of what used to be part of Planned Parenthood. I think they say that to try and influence people. Well, everyone else is. Why don't you? But I do believe that a lot of women are on birth control who are Catholic. And it's because we don't have the true facts in front of us. Now, we know it's against the Catholic Church's teaching, because the church teaches that every act is meant to be unitive for the good of the spouses, which means it's meant to be in marriage, then for the good of the spouses, and to be open to new life. Now, this is no solution to controlling family size, and it's no solution to women's health issues. This is why I love NAPRO technology. That's N-A-P-R-O technology. We're going to post links in the episode notes and on social media to find a NAPRO physician who helps treat underlying health issues and also helps you to understand the natural fertility and infertility of your own body if for a legitimate reason you maybe have a reason to put a pause on having a child at this time. So why every couple should read Humana Vitae, a great document on helping you to understand and discern responsible parenthood and the responsibility to being open to life. You're listening to Trending with Timory here on Relevant Radio. News broke that O-Pill, the low-dose pill, the low-dose birth control pill, also known as the progestin-only pill or the mini pill, is now for sale on Amazon and soon to be at Walgreens and Walmart, available for minors to pick up. Over the counter, no prescription needed. Now, here are some other interesting facts I think are important to be mentioned. Just looking at the O-Pill product label itself, huge increase in risk of ovarian cysts when you take it, irregular bleeding. In fact, if you look at the research behind the trial runs of the O-Pill before it was even released on the market, the most common reason that women got off of O-Pill while doing the clinical trials was that they were having massive irregular bleeding. In fact, 1 in 5 women got off of the pill because of the side effects were so negative. Many women experience liver disease. And again, I mentioned this earlier, endocrine disruptors impacting the hormones. Well, hormones impact the liver. And we're seeing women are dying today from liver disease, and it's not being linked back to birth control, and it needs to be. I'm not even mentioning many of the other common side effects, which are a litany of which I could dive into. You know, I don't have to tell you. Every woman who's been on birth control knows side effects you have had from birth control. O-pill and progestin-only pills have a much higher rate of depression, as I mentioned earlier. The Journal of the American Medical Association posted excellent data exposing this and showing the permanent damage to youth long-term when it comes to their body's ability and their brain's ability to adapt to stress. Why is it that we're putting people first on birth control and then causing depression and anxiety and then giving them the medication for anxiety and depression? Shouldn't we just do away with birth control altogether? Now, this is also a reminder that O-pill specifically, the so-called mini pill, progestin-only pill, also can function as an abortifacient. So what that means is that O-pill can work to prevent sperm and egg from ever meeting and therefore creating a new human life. But it can also lead to the destruction and death of that baby, known as a zygote, in the earliest stage of development, a time in which all the details and data are there in the great new beginning of this human being's life, for us to know things such as eye color, hair color, skin types, characteristics, all of that is there. Yet babies are being blotted out and destroyed in the earliest stages of development. Many moms have no idea that the majority of birth control, including O-pill, functions as an abortifacient, or that it can cause infertility long term. Countless young women have no idea. This isn't even proper consent to so-called medicine, and it's putting women's health on the back burner for the sake of money. Hormonal birth control is one of the top money makers today, along with anxiety medication and depression medication for the pharmaceutical companies. And birth control leads for a need for some of these other medications. Now, there's a startling story that I want to mention that I recently came across of a young 16-year-old girl, Layla Khan. You may have heard her story. Last year in November, she started taking, on November 25th, right around Thanksgiving, this wasn't that long ago, she started taking birth control for symptoms of just a heavy period, not even to try and avoid having a baby. She was put on birth control. Within a handful of days, she started having major symptoms and eventually collapsed. Well, she collapsed. She had a blood clot in her brain when they went to do a CT scan, and she died within just a number of days. She started birth control November 25th, and by November 12th, she was declared brain dead and died shortly after. Why am I telling you her story? Because no one else is. This is a problem now, and why the medical community, why the FDA just allowed for O-pill to be made available over the counter, purchasable now on Amazon, soon to be any day now at Walmart and Walgreens, it's atrocious. If you follow the trends on social media, whether it's TikTok or Instagram, women are telling their stories of why they quit birth control. Now, I'm linking to all of these studies from massive medical journals, and I'm also linking in the episode notes to some of the videos. For example, TikTok video having to do with the worst acne of her life. She was on the pill since she was a little girl. She quit the pill and suddenly just realized after a decade or so of being on it that all of those awful symptoms she was having were from the pill, and that she'd much rather have the PMS and negative symptoms from actually having her cycle than from originally avoiding it. The truth is that there's a lot of data out there, whether it be the link to depression, autoimmune disease, the rise in Crohn's disease that we're hearing a lot about. Women shouldn't be fed the pill and told, suck it up, buttercup. No, we are facing a massive medical crisis today for women, and we need to tell the truth, especially as access to the pill only increases. This is good news to have all of this data, but we have to be willing to have those personal one-on-one conversations when someone has a difficult symptom, when they share they're getting on the pill, whether it's for legitimate reasons, there are other resources. This is Timmery from Trending with Timmery. Friday, what do you do if your spouse wants an open marriage? And you might be aghast at that, but it's becoming more and more of a trend, and one that you're having to figure out how to navigate when the topic comes up. Well, why not? Would you be able to answer that and answer that as a Catholic? Also, why has there been a spike in emergency room visits? Join me daily, 6 p.m. Central, on Relevant Radio or the Relevant Radio app.